Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. This podcast aims to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as the automotive and social media worlds. Thank you for listening to us wherever you are on Spotify, Apple Music, or any other podcast player. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and this week I am joined by fellow YouTuber Tiamat Marduk. I'm still not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but Ben is an F1 gaming YouTuber based in Brisbane, Australia. I've been watching his videos for far too long, but he provides really interesting insight into an entire different side of YouTube that I was previously very unfamiliar with, the world of gaming. But he, of course, is also a mega F1 fan, which meant we had to talk about the forthcoming 2019 season. Subscribe and listen out for future episodes that are coming during this year's Drive the World. I'm going to embarrass you because I actually think I've been watching your channel for maybe 5 years, maybe six. F1 2013.
That's basically when I started.
Really?
Yeah. That's way back in the day.
So, because I used to be a proper, I used to love F1 gaming.
Yeah.
And it was only like through work and eventually YouTube that I stopped playing as much as I did.
Yeah.
But when I was really into it, I was always looking for setup tips or even just like info on the new games, because that was always the exciting part, wasn't it, when games were launching. And so I came across your channel and your voice was so recognizable every time that I was searching through videos. And so it was before I was really aware of YouTube channels and YouTube as a thing.
Wow.
But I kept coming across and mad that we're now sitting here opposite one another.
I know.
For me on the other side of the world and for you in your hometown. But welcome. Thank you so much for joining me anyway.
Pleasure being here.
Welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast that is returning now in 2019. And you're the first guest. So
I feel there's this weight of expectation to try and live up to.
Don't worry.
All the previous guests that have been on.
Well, look, let's kick things off very easily. Why don't you introduce yourself to sort of my audience? Set us up. Who are you? What is your channel? How did you get started?
Okay, so I'm Benjamin Daly. My YouTube name is Tiamat Marduk. A lot of people have trouble pronouncing that, by the way.
I'm so glad you just said it, because I've never known
I've heard a million different pronunciations. Like, I never get surprised anymore. But I make F1 gaming videos on YouTube. Have over 330,000 subscribers. Just have fun just racing and gaming. I always wanted to be like a racing car driver when I was growing up, but that was never an option for me, so I just decided to do the gaming thing, and it's just taken off ever since. So
how did the channel start? Because were you already aware of sort of gaming YouTubers? Did you set it up on purpose to be a channel, or were you just sharing videos with your mates?
No, so it was more like sharing videos with my mates, because I was just racing in like a little private league with 12 other gamers or whatever it was, and someone started recording their races and uploading it to YouTube, and I was like, oh, that looks really cool. So I started doing that for like a couple of years, and then I saw other people were commentating over them, so I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. So I started doing that and doing my own career mode, and then just took off from there, which is ridiculous.
And at the beginning, there weren't that many people doing F1 videos, right?
No.
That was the thing, is not only was your voice super recognisable, but there really wasn't much else out there. So you were like this leading force in F1 tips, or tips for the F1 games, which for me, I thought, this is brilliant. Who is this guy? how quickly did it sort of grow and build? Did you feel a big upswing, or has it been a very gradual growth?
Yeah, so when I invested in a capture card, which like had HD quality. And then I started commentating. I got a better mic. And then I started a proper career mode in 2013. And my channel doubled in size in a month. It went from like 7,000 to 14,000. And just steadily snowballed after that, each F1 game release.
It's mad. Yeah. It's a completely different side of YouTube to what I do. And I guess, okay, so actually I have another question before I go on to that. When was the first time that your face appeared on your YouTube channel?
I think I did a 5,000 subscriber, like,
Okay, fine. I might have missed that.
I've privated that, yeah, actually. Okay, yeah, so, fair play. Yeah.
Because a lot of it is, I guess, you in your bedroom, and as you said, commentating over or talking over, so it's not necessarily out and about. I know you do some more vlogs now, don't you, these days?
Yeah.
But at least at the beginning, it was more behind the camera, just doing commentary and stuff. Yeah. So where do you feel more comfortable these days?
I'm still behind, just in the gaming sphere. It took a long time for me to get comfortable seeing my face on camera. Like, first of all, getting used to your voice on camera, that takes a long time to get used to, building up your confidence, and then you pull up a camera, and I still get a bit nervous in public, so I don't know how you do it on the daily. So it's...
Honestly, that's the thing, is the public thing is the stressy part.
Yeah.
I find like once you start talking, like once you hit record and you start talking, then it's kind of okay, but the bit I hate is pulling the camera up.
Yeah.
That's the bit I hate, because I feel like everyone looks over and goes, what is that douchebag doing?
Do you feel like more comfortable doing it away from like... your hometown or even in your own country? Because I go to the UK and I'm like, oh yeah, here we go, no one knows me here.
No one knows me, I'll crack on, I can just be a nutter with a camera.
Whereas like there's this race that goes on like 5 minutes down the road from my house, and I know that there's potentially like people like I go to school with there, like, oh, hello. I'm like, no.
When you think you might be recognized, it's far. Yeah, maybe. I'm the same as you though. I think in general, in big public spaces, I'm still a little bit nervous. Because it is weird, isn't it? Even though it's YouTubing now is kind of accepted more widely, it still is a bit of an odd thing to do to pop a camera and talk to it. Like, I don't know how Casey Neistat does it, but
he's a pro. He's a pro.
It's like in an Uber. I couldn't vlog in an Uber. I feel just too uncomfortable. Do you say, excuse me, driver, I'm going to vlog now? Or
yeah, you have to explain your situation.
Or
like,
you just
what's
start
the deal
doing
there?
It. And then he goes, what are you doing? I don't know what that accent was. That was me going super racist stereotype.
Unmonetized.
Immediately. Okay, so let's bring us into the sort of the present day. As you said, just over 330,000 subscribers.
Yeah, just on.
Incredible. And am I right in saying you have now sort of got involved with the esports side of things?
I have, yeah. So I've signed to an esports team. I'm more of like a content creator, but I can also kind of drive as well, if I put the effort in. That's the biggest thing. But
Wait, because I'm clueless on esports. I'm literally clueless. So what is the difference between us playing F1 2018 and esports?
So it's probably just the amount of practice and preparation that the drivers put in.
Okay.
Much like an F1 driver, they do simulator work, they do training. Even these esports guys, even though it's not really that physical, they make sure they're in physical condition.
Wow.
They train in the gym. Brendan Lee, who won the championship the last 2 years, he's training every day. He's on the simulator like for 7 hours a day, training, running. Everything.
But now it can take places, right? Because McLaren have got their own sort of esports program, and they're trying to, I guess, F1 are trying to incorporate a new generation or open up different avenues. And so for you, do you see it as like a sort of potential other opportunity, or is it just a bit of fun to do alongside the main YouTube stuff?
It's a bit of both, to be honest. Getting to work with those personalities and see how they operate, and it is about attracting a new audience because... The casual F1 audience is probably, you know, a bit older, and this is more accessible. They're quick, short, sharp races, high action, entertainment. It's just lots going on. There's equal cars, so the racing is a lot closer. People can overtake a lot easier. And yeah, it's just different in F1. They're just trying to experiment in that scene to see if stuff works in the main game, kind of.
It's an interesting area that you hear a lot of people talking about a lot. So I can see what, you know, it's got to be fun. I need to sort of watch it and find out more about it, because I see everyone talking about it. I'm like, this esports thing's super intriguing. But as a gaming YouTuber, because I'm so unfamiliar with it, sort of what is your wider strategy? Because I suppose you're kind of locked into F1, right?
Yes.
So does that frustrate you, or do you love it because... that's just your passion?
Oh, I love F1. It's like what I live and breathe every day. But my audience is so niche. They just like track focused content.
Okay.
They're kind of like, they see like a Forza video, which is more casual, more lifestyle-y kind of thing. And it's weird because it's like, it's cars and it's still racing, but it's not quite the same.
That's not, but do you feel like it's not the same? Or are you going, audience, why are you not thinking that this is?
I enjoy it. It brings a different kind of flavor to the channel, but I don't know, they just don't seem to like it as much. Maybe it's just not as exciting, it's just not close racing, or I don't know, it's just, there's links there that, you know, would make you think that they'd like it, but no, it's just not quite there. I don't know why.
I think audiences tend to box off certain YouTubers and sort of associate them with doing certain things.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it now, the platform's so flooded, like so many different creators doing so much, that when you see a creator try and kind of move into a different avenue, the audience are a little bit like, no.
What is
YouTube
this?
YouTube rabbit videos. If I want to watch my dog videos, I'll go over here. Which is really odd, because if you look at, I guess, the music industry or film industry, actors and musicians can reinvent themselves quite a few times. Not always successfully.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the same with me. I think if I do a complete lifestyle video, like if I just do a coffee tasting video in Brisbane, I don't know how that would go down. It might do all right, but people fundamentally would come to my channel to see cars.
Yeah, exactly. Like the lifestyle thing. Like, yeah. It'd be the same as like if you tried to do like what Archie Hamilton is doing, trying to get into like Le Mans or something. Like,
could you imagine?
It'd be ridiculous.
People are like, what a loser. Yeah. I would fail miserably. Let's talk about that for a second, because we had a similar dream then growing up, the sort of whole racing driver thing.
Yeah.
Did you do karting? Did you do anything?
No, not really. Okay. I did like hire carts, just like go for the day and do that. We never had the money to actually get into racing. But when I started like playing racing games and playing competitively against other people, I'm like, oh, I'm not too bad at this.
This
is not bad. But yeah, it's always something I wanted to do, but it's just motorsport's so expensive.
So expensive.
And that's where the esports comes in, because it's like a grassroots and anyone can pick up a controller and be competitive and play and get signed by McLaren or whatever.
Yeah. And then start doing actual simulator work. And then that might eventually lead us to what was Gran Turismo's platform?
GT Academy.
They were
throwing them into like GT cars.
Yeah.
Like GT3 or something.
Jan Mardenborough, isn't
Yeah.
it? He's sort of, in my mind, the poster boy a bit, at least recently, that's gone from GT Academy through to proper racing.
Yeah.
And hey, that might be esports, right? I mean, that could be in the next 5 years or so, and a new F1 driver that's come from esports.
Possibly, hopefully. Well, they're doing something at the moment with Racer Champions. Like they've got all these different champions from different like categories of racing, and the winner of all these e-races will actually compete in the actual Racer Champions wherever it is. I can't remember.
Yeah, it always moves around. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, so then in terms of, because I know I want to talk about, you've become more involved with the F1 game as well, right? Which is crazy. And let's touch on that in a second. But have you also had any other cool opportunities just in and around F1 in general?
I got to go on the paddock in Melbourne, my first race.
Sick.
Got to go from just seeing the cars, oh yeah, that's cool. And then 5 minutes later, I'm walking down the pit lane or the paddock area and I'm seeing Lewis Hamilton.
No
How
way.
Are you going? Yeah.
That's mad.
I went on the Thursday and I met like every single driver
no
on the
way.
2017 grid.
Who reached, like, that happened through a corporate partner? Or?
Yeah, through Codemasters, because
oh, wow.
I got a pretty good relationship with them.
Okay.
I said, oh, I'm going to the Grand Prix. I was testing in England at the time in February and I was going there in like 2 or 3 weeks time. And they said, why don't you go to the Grand Prix representative of us? And we got some mad opportunities there, just taking photos with everyone. Met Lewis Hamilton like 4 times.
Oh my
like,
god, I hate you so much.
Daniel Ricciardo, Sebastian Vettel, like all these people.
So cash.
Yeah.
So cash.
Oh, you're pretty friendly with Seb as well, so.
Oh, well, I'd like to think so. Even though I had to remind him that I'd already met him the second time we met. But he was like, oh yes, I think he said that politely, but anyway. Okay, so you just touched on it. Let's talk about it a bit more, because it's quite an amazing story. And if you're a F1 gaming YouTuber, to end up working with the F1 gaming company or the developers of the F1 game must almost be a dream come true.
It is, yeah, because I kind of idolized the developers growing up, like seeing the first F1 game come out in 2010 and seeing the developer diaries and go, like, what they do as a job is so cool. Then 2016, I went and I met them and I was like just starstruck meeting those guys. And recently, in this year's game, I mean, my face is in the game.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it does not feel totally surreal to you? Like, you're in the game, or you're part of the game.
Yeah, I don't get it. That was never even a dream of mine. So to have that happen, it's just ridiculous.
So how did it happen at the first? Like, did they reach out to you? What was the sort of context?
So they reached out to like kind of influential members of the community. There was me and a few other F1 YouTubers and just people who maybe like really fast at the game. We did that testing in 2016. Then we got re-invited for 2017. They got some new tech that was able to 3D face scan people's faces, and basically the same thing that they do with the drivers.
Wow.
And they do it with a few of us, and we're dotted around in the pit lane and
that's
stuff.
That's amazing. And so are you giving feedback and helping to say, you know, that's not a good feature, let's make this more realistic?
Yeah, pretty much. Just giving tips on the handling and just new features that were in career mode at the time, just helping to make the game more balanced and stuff, and have a say into like what might go into future titles, which...
Okay, well, that's what I was really going to pick up on you, because even though I'm playing less and less these days, which frustrates me, I still love the F1 games, and it's the first, well, it's really the only game that I buy these days for I'm on PlayStation.
Nothing wrong with that.
Thank you very much. what do you feel is missing from F1 games? What would you add? Because safety cars, damage, you know, all of these different things you always have people griping about. And yes, you've got to have that mixed between arcade and simulator. So just you on a personal level, not with your Codemasters head on, what would you love to have as an F1 fan and as a gamer?
I think it would be driver transfers, actually, in career mode. So having like Lewis Hamilton switch to Ferrari or what have you.
Sure.
Because it can get a little bit repetitive with everyone in the same teams and everything after a few years. Like FIFA allow you to like switch teams and it keeps it fresh.
Absolutely. Because on career mode, for those of you who haven't played F1 game, you can obviously move teams, right?
Yes.
You usually replace the second driver.
You can actually choose who you can replace. Yeah.
Okay, nice. But the other AI drivers don't often move around.
No.
And because I haven't played much of F1 2018, how sort of AI, how many sort of crashes take place? How many incidents take place that don't involve you? So how many yellow flags will you come across in a race?
You never used to see them, but they're getting better at humanizing the AI a bit more. They're a bit more aggressive. You might see like one or two crashes, plus like a reliability issue here and there. But I actually wish that they make reliability issues for the player, because it's a bit too easy. Your car never breaks down unless you like run your engine into 100%.
And that's, I think, us as mega F1 fans, because I agree with you. Like, and I guess as a developer, that's where you've got to really find that balance, right, between the first-time players or the everyday arcadey type players and the nerds like us. Because we want, essentially, to be F1 drivers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just digitally. So we're looking for that real experience. And in our heads, breaking down is a part of being an F1 driver.
Complaining about the team.
Oh, God, it's so annoying. You know, it's part of racing.
Keep a two engine.
That would be incredible.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I can understand why they don't dial that in. But I would often find myself creating those kind of scenarios almost in my imagination, so I'd be like, oh, there's a hold back. Oh no, I'm stuck in third gear. Let's see if I can finish the race. Have you been that much of a loser as well?
Yes.
Yes.
In the old days, this is probably a bit controversial to say, but I used to maybe slow down and take someone out off camera and cause a safety car and make the race a bit more dramatic. I haven't done that in many years, so don't kill me in the comments.
Good old, they're coming for you now.
Yeah. There's your title.
Okay, so let's move the conversation on a little bit, because I'm aware that some of my audience might not be gamers or even F1 gamers. So let's firstly touch on road cars.
Yep.
You turned up today at this lovely Brisbane apartment in your very yellow, it was a 350, the
370Z,
370Z, I was going to say, new headlights. You have for about over a year?
Yeah, a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Happy with that?
Yeah.
It looks great.
It does, in person.
Yeah.
Cameras, really, I mean, pictures don't do it justice, and I'm sure you can attest to this when you post everything on Instagram. It's just like, damn, when you see it in person, it's just been cleaned. And,
No, it looks great. And so, have you always had a sort of appreciation or a love for road cars as well as motorsport?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
That actually didn't start until I got my license.
Oh, okay.
I kind of like cars, but then I really got into it in the last few years, and that's how I found you and Paul and all those guys.
I apologize.
And now every day I'm like, oh, damn, oh, Sam and his 360, I want one.
Yeah. It's weird that, isn't it? Because you can be an absolute motorsport nut and not always have that translate into road cars.
No, which is big disconnect, which I don't understand.
Yeah, it's weird. You're definitely not alone in that. But as I say, super nice. So what are you going to do with that car? Because you're about to move to the UK, aren't you?
Everyone's asking me, like, are you taking it with you? Like, I want to, but I also want to try the German cuisine over there. Okay. Because here, like, German cars are, like, worth twice as much.
Really?
Yeah, like, a used R8 is worth twice as much here than in the UK.
Oh, wow, yeah, because, yeah, used R8s are true nowadays.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, check it out. Come on, get an R8.
Yeah, so I'm going to sell that. Okay. The R8 is a dream car.
Yeah,
I'm thinking either M3,
okay,
RS5, or S3. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you got to do it as well. Because I've noticed here, like, we've literally only been here for a couple of days, and obviously you have the kind of Aussie muscle scene, which I guess is maybe a trade over from some of the American V8s and stuff like that.
It's this weird mix of UK and US car culture.
Sure.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. I need to like dive in a little bit more and learn a bit more. But I think, yeah, I haven't seen a lot of the big German whip, so I think, yeah, get up on that. I think you'd be having some fun.
Yeah.
And have you ever had a chance to do like a track day or something? I know we talked about karting and you didn't do that, but no. What about more recently?
I think I'd be too scared to take it on the track.
Really?
Even though I have a racetrack 5 minutes down the road from my house. Maybe I should do it before I go.
You're going to be in the UK. We have plenty of racetracks.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty. And many track days. So maybe that could be a thing in your RS5. You could be hooting around tracks. But
that'd be a good video.
Yeah. Just don't bin it.
that would be a better
video, actually.
Yes. Ooh, I think it's a clickbait.
So then Formula One as a sport itself, we've already talked about the fact that you're pretty obsessed with it. Where did that come from? What was your sort of earliest memories of F1? What was your favorite season, things like that?
I didn't really get into it until like lately, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
I started around 2010.
Sure.
But my earliest memory is like 2007, 2008.
Okay.
Remember,
okay,
like Lewis, might have been 2009 actually. Remember Hamilton like struggling in his McLaren, trying to get the car back on the pace to catch up with those bloody Brawns. And then I really got involved when the Mark Webber, Sebastian Vettel clash happened at Turkey.
Okay.
From then on, hooked.
And so when did the channel start?
So I had a channel back in 2010, 2011, but I didn't start properly until like 2013.
Okay, so the gaming and the actual F1 watching kind of happened at the same time?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I got into F1. I properly got into F1 because I heard there was an F1 game coming. I played it, and that further cemented my fandom with the sport.
Nice. And were you a Webber or a Vettel man at that point?
What kind of question is that? Australian.
It had to be asked.
Yeah. Webber for sure, but I'm more of a Daniel Ricciardo man. Yeah. Okay, I think I kind of supported Webber more because he was Australian, but sure. I genuinely love Ricciardo. He's such a character.
So we have to move on to F1 2019. The big man, the big move to Renault.
Oh, yes.
What's going to happen?
I don't know. I'm praying, honestly. It's a long-term play, almost like Lewis Hamilton to Mercedes in 2013. I don't know if it's going to work, though. I really feel like Red Bull Honda have going to have a really good package.
Do you think?
This year.
I think so. Horse,
yeah, because like the Honda was keeping up. It was like par with like Renault last year. It was like not really lacking in a straight line. And I think, if anything, it was probably carrying the Toro Rosso, which probably didn't have the best chassis, but I think it was solid. And with more development with Red Bull and having four cars to synergize the energy or the data together, I think that'll really help them.
So why did he move?
I think we know why he moved. Because in a straight-up fight with Max, it's very hard to beat him.
I think over a season at this point, he might still have it. If they had equal reliability, I think he's got the head on him and the long-term play in him that he could still edge it. But one or two seasons further down the line, I think Max's whole package will be much more rounded.
Yeah.
And I think maybe Daniel saw that and thought, well, this kid is just too much. Let's get out. And he had to make that move.
Yes.
And you're right where Renault, if it comes off, it will be like freaking bravo.
Yeah, the biggest decision of his career. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Last 10 years.
Renault have always won whenever they've entered the sport, eventually.
Yes.
But now, like, oh, I don't know. It makes me, like, agitated because I'm a big fan of Ricciardo as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's, like, everyone's second favourite driver.
Yeah.
No matter who you support.
It's what I feel like I would be like if I was in F1.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Or I'd like to think I would be like, because he's just having so much fun the whole time. What was he like? You got to meet him very briefly in Melbourne?
Yeah, I got to meet him a few times. Just said hello, g'day. That's the hybrid of the two. Yeah, he was very friendly. Him and Lewis Hamilton were the most friendly guys that I met out of any of the drivers. I also went to Abu Dhabi 2017 for the finale that year.
Oh, nice.
Saw him there too. He was also very friendly. So
yeah, how cool.
Really cool.
Okay.
He's just like he is like on camera.
I'm sure. Yeah, you couldn't really cool. pretend to be that nice. That like, you just get exhausted after a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to keep our fingers crossed. I don't think 2019 is going to be his year. It'd be great if he got a podium, just to be a bit of a middle finger up to everyone that kind of disrespected it. But I think we're looking at 2020, 2021.
I hope they're playing it. I hope they're downplaying like what they've got behind the scenes.
I hope so.
Think
like,
some people are quietly confident that they might be a bit better than what they were last year, and they might get maybe a couple of
podiums here
and there.
They've been moving forward. And if you look at the rest of the... They've got to destroy the rest of the midfield, surely, next year.
Yes, yeah.
But it's whether they can ever tap into that top three. Who knows? But it would be exciting. I would hate to see his career now dwindle and it seem like a mistake. But only time will tell.
Yes.
The question that I really want to ask, which I've been asking everyone, is who is going to win in the Vettel-Leclerc battle?
I think Leclerc might win.
Exciting.
He's very promising.
Oh,
he's
my God. So exciting.
Ridiculously quick. Sure, he struggled at the start of the season versus Ericsson, but he came on so strong. He looked like he was outperforming that Sauber ridiculously.
Unbelievably. I think the confidence he's got at the moment will push him forward.
Yeah.
And Vettel, like, the last two seasons, what's going on, dude? What is going on?
Overthinking. I don't know. Too desperate. Just those first, so many first lap incidents, which really set him back. Just that, I mean, that mistake at Germany he made was just like the catalyst for everything. If he wins that race, probably, I don't know, at least takes it to the final race of the season.
For sure. But as you say, from there, it just seemed to spiral out of control.
Yeah.
And it's so weird. I over Christmas in my bored state, I went back and watched loads of like highlights videos from like 1999 highlights, but also a lot of Lewis Hamilton's like 2012, 2013. And Lewis used to make a lot of mistakes. You know, he really did, and especially in those kind of years, like he was a bit messy. And I think it's easy to say the guy in the fastest car is always going to win, and the ball of Lewis. But in my mind, being a Hamilton fan, he has just become the most complete driver, and he doesn't make mistakes nowadays.
He just seems to get better with age. It's ridiculous.
Oh my God, it's ridiculous. And this year, he would have, I believe, he would have won the championship in a Ferrari.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah, he just had so much composure.
So much composure, and Vettel really seemed to lose that championship.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, Lewis came on strong towards the end, but that's because Vettel was just fading away so quickly.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited by Leclerc, and I think it would be great for the sport if he went in there and took the fight immediately to Hamilton. And it worries me about what Vettel will do, because he didn't cope with Danny Ric coming in and beating him very well.
He's got nowhere else to go after this. Like, after Ferrari, do you then sacrifice everything and try and go to Mercedes? But who wants to go up against Lewis Hamilton?
No, exactly. Especially when you lose in another team, you know. Like, yeah. It's just, I mean, do you go back to Red Bull? I feel like he soured those grapes a bit too much.
Christian Horner still talks well of him, but you know, I think they would take him back, to be honest.
Probably.
Might have to take a bit of a pay cut.
But do you not feel like, just because of the driver changes, it sets up next year for just being super exciting?
Oh yeah, there's so many driver changes. You just don't know what's going to happen. It's just refreshing rivalries up and down the field. It's going to be such a good year.
You mentioned your sort of hope of that happening in the game, of, you know, drivers changing. And yeah, this is it in real life now. Because whilst there are not a huge number of rule changes, we've got the sort of new wings. The drive changes, I think, you know, what's going to make it super interesting, and seeing how Kimi performs at Sauber and all these new faces, Lando Norris, I'm excited by, I think will make it good viewing. I don't know how I'm going to watch it this year. I'm going to be the wrong time. How do you watch it with time zones?
I'm fine because it's on in the afternoon for Australia, but most, like, the European rounds run at like 10 p.m.
I was going to say,
which I actually really like, because I can do everything during the day and then chill out at night and watch
it. Because I actually love for us, that's like the American Brazil races and Canada at evening, and I actually love it as well. Yeah. We're like 7-8 p.m.
For us, those American races are on at 5 a.m. 4 a.m. Really bad. It's like, do you stay up? Do you wake up really early?
Yeah.
And me, I'm a bit of a night owl, so that's a bit of an option for me, so I end up staying up late. And
is that when you're doing your filming editing, or?
Filming, editing, racing, talking to my girlfriend who's in the UK as well. So it's just a bit mad, really.
What's your editing process like though? Because how much cuts and you know, sort of time and effort goes into the edit?
So you have to like bring a whole weekend together. Say for career mode, you briefly touch over practice, then qualifying, you show your fastest lap, and then I try and edit down so you just show crucial parts of the race, so me overtaking drivers, strategical moments, and just other little bits. I spend a good like 2 hours editing, which for some people is a lot. Others, not much, because I know other people who are doing F1 gaming videos and they're editing for twice as long. So it's just like, everyone has their process, but after many years of like getting used to it, I'm able to like do a few shortcuts here and there and get it done quicker. So
you find your way, don't you? You find your rhythm.
Yeah.
So who are the other sort of F1 gaming YouTubers then? Are there a lot of them nowadays?
So the second biggest guy is Arav. He's from the UK as well. He's on like 230 as well.
Okay.
Then there's a big gap to the next guy. We had a few people quit over the years.
Well, Matty G, right?
Yeah. He's doing WTF1.
WTF1, which I actually did their podcast.
I saw that. Yeah,
have done a bit. So I'm sure a lot of my listeners and viewers will know about those guys. So Matt, the presenter, used to be F1 gaming YouTuber, right?
Yeah, as well. So
then he bailed and went for the big time. What a setup.
I think all of us would, to be honest. The amount of opportunities he's doing is amazing.
That was a good call that came his way. But, okay, so you lost him. So it's really you and Arav, and then a handful of sort of smaller guys?
Yeah, around like 50, 40, 30, 20K.
Okay.
So
and
there's
UK or Europe-based?
Most of them are UK.
Okay, wow.
I think they're all UK. It's a couple of Australians, but they're like 1,000 subscribers. Okay. So it's like, yeah, if you want to be an F1 YouTuber, get in now.
Here's the opportunity. It's kicking off.
Yeah, there's not many of us.
So then, what's it been like being a YouTuber in Australia and in Brisbane and then, I guess, within quite a niche space?
Yeah, so, like, YouTube as a term is, like, not really well... Like, YouTubers, there's not really many around here. And especially, like, anyone who's into F1, that's, like, even further, like, from the point. So yeah, it's quite rare to have a YouTuber from Australia, from Brisbane. So there's not really much going on here in terms of opportunity. So I'm actually moving to the UK in a month or two.
That's the big news.
To chase some, to just be closer to the sport of F1 and other people and just more opportunities and hopefully make better content.
That's got to be super, super interesting, because I was so lucky when I started YouTube that I had Paul Supercars London and Tim Schmee 150. literally like an arm's length away. Like those guys picked me up and helped me grow my channel, but taught me so much. And it's such a weird career and life. And you can only explain it and talk through your sort of issues or concerns with other YouTubers because no one understands. Complaining about editing, people are like, go away. aren't you making £5 million a minute? People don't understand. So I can imagine that must have been quite difficult at the beginning, at least, and maybe still more recently. Because it's a lonely job at the best of times.
Yeah, you're in your home all day, editing, commentating, doing what you have to do, and you can talk to your mates like through Skype or whatever, in your party on Xbox or whatever it is, and it's not quite the same, but yeah, you just have to find friends where you can and just like vent, complain about the platform or whatever. YouTube's a funny place in 2019, so it's always things to talk
and
about.
Your parents were always cool with it, or did they?
No, really? No. Okay. They wanted me to stick with uni. I was doing accounting for 4 years. Oh, I'm technically still in uni, but I haven't.
Just haven't ever turned up.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I have 10 years to finish the course, but I'm not going to do the course.
University of Brisbane or?
It's in Ipswich. It's like half an hour. Yeah, half an hour. It's been so long.
That's amazing.
They didn't want me to do it at first, and then they saw these opportunities that were coming through it. I was traveling to Europe and to Abu Dhabi and meeting F1 drivers and being in the game, and they completely get it now. So
that's the thing. I think the way the sort of social media is growing, the way that being a YouTuber is growing, and the opportunities that are coming from it, even if you don't know where does this take you? What does this mean? You know, I feel, I don't know about you, but I feel like I get that a lot. You know, when you say I'm a YouTuber, they go, oh, so where do you see yourself in 5 years? I don't always have an answer, but I do feel like the opportunities, the people you meet, the doors that are open to us at the moment could provide amazing opportunities.
Yeah.
Like you said, you didn't see yourself in an F1 game, but now you are in one and you've got a great relationship with developers of games and esports and stuff like that. So who knows what the future might hold.
Who would have thought you'd be driving an F1 car last year?
Oh my God. Okay.
That would have been an experience.
I need to loop you in on an email to Infinity, because that is everything you think an F1 car is going to be, times it by 10.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
My brain couldn't. I thought I was ready. I thought I knew what to expect.
Yeah.
We've watched enough F1 that I was like, okay, yeah, sure. But no, I mean, not a chance. And I didn't even experience downforce. Like,
no, because you have to push so much to get the grip in the tires.
Oh, the confidence is never going to be there. I was a frustrated wannabe racer up until the age of about 12 or 13 when I was crap and ran out of money. And so abandoned that career and have ever since, you know, just raced around the streets legally, by the way. And so getting that opportunity, you're just so like blown away by it. But the car I think is running at like 80% of what it could do. So it's pretty close, but it's obviously pretty safe.
Was it dulled down like traction control wise or something?
Yes. So basically you've got a guy sitting in the back. Everything's kept within safety for reliability. So the engine revs to 15,000 instead of 18, I think.
Okay.
And it's got 6 gears instead of 7, or, you know, it runs 6 gears instead of 7. And then you've got a guy sitting in the back of the garage who I sort of clocked pretty early and went to chat to, who is essentially live controlling traction, ABS, etc.
Wow.
So he basically reads your install lap and goes, okay, turn this off, turn that down. And he says the majority of people they have for that experience, because you can just go and buy it. It's like 15 grand, I think, pounds.
So like $30,000 Australian dollars.
Just go and do that day. He said the majority of people come in, he runs them at like 65-70% traction control and like 50% ABS. He said, but every now and again you come in and you can turn it all off. And he said, it's still pretty hard to spin out.
Yeah, okay.
So acceleration, I kind of got the idea of, but man, braking. That's the thing which you're not prepared for. I kicked that brake pedal like I kicked like a man who had a gun against my mum's head. Do you know what I mean? I kicked it so freaking hard. Came back to the pits and they told me it was 46% brake pressure I applied.
Oh no.
46%. And they said that the drivers apply a minimum of 75% for every corner.
Yeah.
I mean, what? That's what?
ridiculous.
It's another world, dude. It's another world. But anyway, hopefully you'll get that experience at some point.
Hopefully, that'll be the dream.
You're on the right track. anyway, look, we've been chatting enough. If there's anything you want to sort of say to my audience, anything to tease about the future, we've already talked about your big move to the UK, exciting stuff with esports. Anything else you kind of got planned? Any ambitions for this year or moving forward?
Well, I guess because you guys are car fans, I might be trying to get my dream car. I'd love to get like an R8, like I said. So if I do get that, I might make some vlogs on that or something.
Dude, amazing. So, well, I need to link in with Paul Wallace as well. And you can go get some really horrible exhaust.
I need an exhaust. I think an R8 is just a bit too dulled down.
The V8 ones are super, super subdued for some reason. So you just, make it nice and shouty and put some awful wrap on it. And you'll be at the UK car scene before you know it. Well, anyway, thank you so much. Thanks for coming to chat.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
It's been great visiting your hometown and finally meeting. I mean, it's weird hearing your voice and then seeing you.
Yeah, likewise. I've been watching you for probably just as long as you've been watching me. Mate, so.
Thank you very much. Look at us, like, welcome chats back. But, cheers, buddy. Thank you so much.
That's all right. It's been a pleasure.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.